Welcome to the Dietitians Unplugged podcast with Erin Flores and Glennis Oyston. Join us as we explore the idea of health and wellness from a new perspective. Each episode, we will discuss topics that will help you improve your health, body image, and fitness without obsessing on the scale or counting calories. We believe in health at every size, intuitive eating, and body positivity, and we want to help you build the confidence to ditch the scale, embrace your health, and unplug from the world of diets and body shame.
Welcome back to another episode of Dietitians Unplugged. I'm Erin.
And I'm Glennis.
And we are excited to be having another great conversation with each other and you all. And we decided this would be a good time to talk about exercise and all the things that maybe come up when it comes to intuitive eating and health at every size. And I'll just start by saying I hate the word exercise. That word to me tends to make the activity sound punishing on some level. So I'm going to do my darndest to just say movement.
Yeah.
Because I think that word sounds much kinder and I think people might do it more rather than calling it exercise.
I don't think you're alone. I also hate the word exercise. I mean, I use it as a short form for, you know, I prefer movement or activity.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people hate exercise, that a lot of people who have dieted for a long time or been trying to lose weight, I've seen on Facebook comments like, I just hate exercise. And when I have framed it in a different way, like, what about any kind of movement? Do you like walking? Or, you know, I like dancing in my living room after a couple glasses of wine. So, If you frame it differently as movement, it's a whole different ball of wax.
Sure.
One of the reasons we wanted to talk about this is that I came across an article in The Atlantic, which is a pretty respectable magazine. I was a little bit surprised by it. I guess I wasn't surprised by it. It was a page, it's just like an infographic, and it's a page called Exercise and Futility. And basically what it talks about, it has 4 points, and it basically said, the first point, that between 1988 and 2006, women more than doubled their frequency of exercise, while men upped theirs by nearly 50%. But the prevalence of obesity among Americans increased from 23% to 35% in the same time period. So if you just read that, you could say, oh, well, I guess exercise is probably responsible for people getting fatter. Yeah. But you know, we can also look at dieting efforts over that time frame, which also increased. I once saw a great chart that showed dieting efforts increased over that time almost at a 1-to-1 ratio with weights increasing. But let's read on. The point two was that there seems to be little correlation between exercise and obesity rates. They looked at people in Norway and Japan. They're less likely to be active than Americans, yet they are also much less likely to be obese. Their words, not mine. I hate the word obese.
Right.
Let's just call it fat.
Yeah.
And on an individual level, the connection between physical activity and BMI is murky. Most studies show that exercise has a limited effect on weight loss, and it's far less reliable than watching your diet. That's what they say. We already know how reliable that is.
Yeah.
You know, everybody can lose weight a little in the short term, but in the long term, they get it all back. So, and then point number three was that it seems like, you know, we've been taught calories in, calories out, and the calories out is you exercising. But what they have found in studies is that the calories out part, the exercising part, seems to have very little to do with calories burned. They measured 30 Hadza foragers in northern Tanzania, and they found that the foragers walked up to twice as far as Westerners each day, but they didn't burn any extra calories. And that they showed the same phenomenon in monkeys in the wild and the zoo. The monkeys in the wild don't burn more calories than the ones in zoos. And so what they found is that when people start exercising, this is point four, that they initially start to burn a lot of energy, but after that kept exercising, they plateaued. And that's kind of the same thing they find with dieting.
Yeah.
That you drop a lot of weight at first and then you plateau. And that's because your metabolism is triggered to save calories so that an energy deficit doesn't disrupt important bodily functions. That's how that point ends. Your body is trying to stay at equilibrium. And so if you just read those 4 points, you're like, well, the hell with exercising.
Right.
Forget it. I'm just going to stay fat. I might as well not exercise. But they do finish up with this, of course, is no reason to set fire to Pilates mat. Just keep exercising because it's good for you. It's good for bone health. It's good for heart. It's good for controlling a lot of things. It's good for diabetes, all sorts of, you know, things. So I guess keep exercising, except if they, here's the problem with diet culture. They are framing this again as this is not going to help you lose weight. And that's true. I mean, they've done a lot of studies to show that exercise actually doesn't help people lose a lot of weight, significant amount of weight over, you know, and keep it off for a long period of time. And ask any fat person that exercises a lot and they'll say, yep, I exercise a lot.
Right.
And that's both of us, I think. Yeah. So, so there's so much going on here. First, there's the framing of exercise for weight loss only. And that's, I think, why you probably hate the word exercise and why I hate it.
Right. And I think that's, if we were to even just take that for, start with that point, that they're framing exercise as a way to lose weight, then that taints everything else. Right. Because, and I think that is not the uncommon, I mean, that is not the uncommon majority, right? I mean, everyone, I think, most people frame movement as a way to lose weight.
Yeah.
And absolutely. That's why they do it.
Yeah.
And they will enroll in the 30-day boot camp challenge. They'll, you know, use the Groupon for bar method. They'll sign up for John's amazing gym. They'll join 24-hour fitness. They'll do all these things. They'll go to SoulCycle. Because I'm guessing most of them, the driving force is losing weight.
Yeah. Or preventing becoming fat.
Sure.
If right. you're already thin.
Right.
You know. So what was your experience with exercise before you found health at every size? And then what was your experience with exercise after? Because you said something interesting to me before we started, yeah. which was you have struggled with the exercise component of health at every size.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, and that's, you know, and so my own experience with it is this, is it's always been the toughest thing to consistently do. So I've always been very athletic, played on a lot of high school teams, you know, was not the best athlete by far, but above average, you know, I'm coordinated. I can throw a ball. I can catch. I can, you know, do those things. But I hated training, right? So I was on the volleyball team, loved all that. But again, I went to school in, I live out in Southern California. We're in Southern California. So I went to school in Pacific Palisades. So if you've seen Fast Times at Richmond High, I went to school with Jeff Spicoli. basically.
Awesome dude.
I went, yeah. So, and most of those Jeff Spicoli type people were on the volleyball team. And so, you know, the coach would say, go run a mile. And we'd all run outside and hang out for 10, 15 minutes. And then all of a sudden come back in huffing and puffing. You know, we didn't cool. run a mile. Right. So, you know, but I liked the sport. I liked the sport and team things in as far as exercise. Those things really resonated with me. And then, you know, I've run a marathon, right? I've biked 100 miles. I've done a century on my bike. I've done these really like big, grandiose things, and I have always enjoyed training for them and doing them. But then once they're over, I'm like, all right, so what's next?
And you don't want to do that thing anymore, well, that same thing?
I might, but okay. But it's hard to like think about doing it again. The thing I know is I hate the gym.
Yeah.
And someone said it, but it resonated a lot with me, and it really crystallized why I don't like the gym. Is someone said, and I forget who it was, they said, I don't like going to the gym when I'm in a larger body because I feel like everyone there is exercising to not be me.
Wow, that's really profound.
And
they're probably right.
And they're probably right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't like the gym, one, because of sort of that notion, but two, you know, standing still, feeling like a mouse on a in a cage, or, you know, with that spinning wheel, like a hamster on a spinning wheel, it brings me no joy. And you know, and so it is a challenge to find something that resonates with that I enjoy, because things come out of favor. And but I know sort of things that really I do like, but I just need to remember, oh, I got to do those things.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I went canoeing one day with my wife when we were on a vacation together, and I will go on hikes with the kids, and I love it. But it's the consistency. So what I find both in myself but with other clients is that consistency. And I think that is always the hardest part. It's the hard part to sort of say, this is something that I really enjoy. It's not about changing the number on the scale, but, oh, if I go out and do it, I actually like it. And I think that's the struggle that I hear a lot with other people as well.
Yeah. I have a kind of a different history with exercise. So I was a completely uncoordinated child, terrible at any kind of team sports. I played soccer for fifth and sixth grade, and then that was kind of it. But I was super active. I was always out playing. That was back in the day when kids could play outside, and we would play outside in really large groups, and I could go for hours on a game of tag or hide and seek. And I always wanted, in school, I always wanted to be an athletic kid, but I was hopelessly not an athletic kid. I think I tried long distance running. I'm like the worst long distance runner. I had plantar fasciitis starting age 10 that I have had on and off since then. And I've just recently discovered, from age 10 to age 44, I have discovered that, oh, it's running that causes plantar fasciitis for me. Yeah. Anytime I try to run. So I hate running so much. But I would like to be active, you know. And through high school, of course, because I didn't belong to any team sports, that's sort of when you're starting to become an adult. You're not a child. I can't play outside in the same way anymore. So really during high school, I just stopped really doing any kind of exercise aside from walking to school. And I even think I started to take the bus to school at that point, the city bus.
Yeah.
So I didn't really start to exercise regularly. I guess actually in my 20s, when I realized I was fat and that I was really in the wrong body, I started to the 20-minute workout was popular in the late 80s. So I started doing that. I've hurt myself so many times doing all those crazy aerobic exercises. I remember Susan Powder was huge, and she was like, exercise until you drop kind of thing.
Yeah,
I have dropped. I did try to do weight work. Once, in my early 20s, I went so hard at it that I couldn't sit down for a week without screaming in pain because I pulled every muscle in my leg. So I, of course, that's when I started to think about, well, exercise is for your body. And then when I actually did lose weight, the funny thing is I really didn't exercise.
Huh.
That was the weird, I was like, I'm not into this. So I lost weight without exercising.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I did a little bit of walking, and that was about it. But, you know, as time goes by, that weight tries to keep creeping back on. So it's like, okay, what's the next thing I do? Oh, I add some exercise. And so somewhere along there, I joined the gym, because that's what you do.
Yeah.
That's what people are supposed to do.
Yeah.
I hated the gym. I hated going. I think I was one of those classic people that had a gym membership and never went.
Right. I had one for so long. I mean,
yeah.
I think I've donated more money to 24-Hour Fitness than to any other cause that I've ever given money to.
Yeah. I always laugh when I hear people say, I'm going to join a gym, and that's going to make me go, because I was spending money on it. I'm like, let me tell you, it will not make you go. You can spend money on it and completely ignore it and feel very guilty for spending money on something you're not using. But over time, I did start to go, as I got more eating disordered and kind of crazier with my dieting, I actually did start to go to the gym more regularly.
Yeah.
And to the point where it's just obsessive. and unpleasant, and I didn't like it, but I still went because I thought, well, this is how you get thin.
Yeah.
And then when I finally decided to do this health at every size thing and to quit dieting and to, I decided I was going to quit going to the gym altogether. Yeah. Because what I realized was I don't know if I'm doing this because I like it or because I feel like I have to.
Right.
And so I quit. And I quit for a long time, at least a year. And I realized that I actually really like activity.
Right.
And I needed activity to actually feel good.
Yeah.
So I actually have rejoined the gym. I belong to the YMCA.
Uh-huh.
And, but, you know, it was kind of healing that relationship that took some time. Because I was like, I still think I sometimes feel guilty if I don't go. And I'm working on eradicating that altogether. Because I realized if I don't feel like going, I don't have to go.
Yeah.
And I... And that, when I finally kind of made that connection, I realized I go a lot more just to relax. Right. I kind of treat exercise like intuitive eating at this point.
Yeah.
I only do it if it feels good. And then I'm trying to find other things I like. Just like you, it's like, what's next?
Yeah.
You know, I've tried swimming. I don't like getting wet in the middle of the day. So that's been a problem.
So you're like a vampire swimmer?
Yeah, exactly. I can only swim
at night. Got it.
Yeah, I guess. So
first one.
Yeah. So but I think that our stories are, they must resonate with other people, because I think a lot of people have that experience of like, I just go to be thin.
Yeah.
So maybe when I read this article about exercise and futility, it's part of me was like relieved.
Yeah.
Like, awesome. Finally proof to show that exercise really over the long run does not affect your body weight that much.
Right.
And that kind of, even though I've known that for a long time, that kind of felt good to me.
It's
like, I can really just do this if it feels good.
Well, and the thing that I hear all the time too, when it comes to this, it, along those same lines, is someone saying, who is really into sort of losing weight and exercising and dieting, is that you can't out exercise a bad diet. I hear that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That you can exercise as much as you want and do all this stuff, but if you're not eating right too, you're not doing anything good for yourself. And to me, that, I mean, that just epitomizes that diet mentality, right? That if you might as well do not do any of it unless you're going to do both of them together.
Check the baby out with the bathwater.
Right?
Like, don't bother doing anything then.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the interesting for me is that even though I go through like cycles where it's harder to get out and do something that is enjoyable movement,
mm-hmm.
I know deep down that it is the one thing that does a better job than almost anything else in my life to manage my stress and to build my own confidence in my body. You know, when I ran the marathon, I was, you know, maybe a few pounds lighter than what I am now, but mm-hmm. not significantly. But, you know, the confidence I had in myself and the body was immense. And I remember, you know, just the sheer accomplishment of it, you know, was really powerful to say I can challenge the body I have today with a tremendous task. And I can do it and I can survive. And it's not about changing the number on the scale, but it's about the confidence that if I ask my body to do something, it will listen. And I remember that even the day after I completed the marathon, I couldn't walk, but I had to.
Really?
I had to walk somewhere, and it was for when I was at work. And where I worked, it was where the marathon had gone through. So I went back the next day, all cleaned up, and I had to walk part of like, you know, an eighth of a mile of the course or whatever. And I was in tears because I was like, I did this. Like, I am a marathoner. Like, this body, right? This body is a marathoner. And to me, that was like a body positive moment that lasted for quite a while, right? I mean, just to even think about that, like, hey, I'm a marathoner. And whether it doesn't matter how fast I went or how slow, I'm a marathoner.
Yeah.
And I think if we can, no matter what size we are, if we can think about challenging ourselves in that way, there's something that's really powerful that comes from actually doing it and right. actually saying, you know, and even if you don't do it, right? Let's say you injure yourself or whatever, but I tried, right? It's better yeah. to get up there and try than to not do anything at all.
And that's definitely one way of thinking about it. And it's the exact opposite way of how I think about it.
Yeah.
So I hate any kind of challenge uh-huh. when it comes to exercise.
Right.
I realize that because that's how I sort of thought about it when I was dieting. And I thought, you can just do all of this exercise. And of course, the challenge was to keep the weight off. But part right. of it was me. I was into backpacking at that time. And I would carry a huge backpack way up a mountain and, you know, hike 10 miles in a day or 6 mm-hmm. miles, however long. It felt like 50 miles, but it was probably 6 miles. But and I would be exhausted and I kind of didn't like it. But at the same time, I was like, I did it. You know, I'm tough. But I realized, like, once I gave all of that up, I thought, oh, my God, I don't want to walk anywhere with this pack on my back and try to prove anything to anybody because I don't need to prove this to myself. Right. So I hate a challenge. And so now whenever somebody says, yeah, just do this for the challenge of it, I shut down. And I yeah. think, no, I'm not doing that yeah. for any kind of challenge. And so what I have done is just completely focus it on how I feel internally.
Yeah.
When I do something, and I don't believe in pushing the, you know, people say, oh, and you're tired and you go to the, you know, gym or do your exercise or whatever, and you'll just feel better. But what I've realized is sometimes there's times when I'm just so tired.
Absolutely.
Exercise is not going to make me feel better. What I need is rest.
Yeah.
And that has been a huge relief for me to be able to say to myself, no, today you are too tired. Sometimes there's fatigue and you get a little, okay, yeah, some exercise or activity, right? I don't want to use the word exercise yeah. anymore. Activity is going to perk me up a bit.
Right.
And then there's other times I'm like, you don't have to push through the pain. You don't have to yeah. push through the exhaustion. So
I had a very similar experience in the marathon too, at training for it, because for the first third of my training, I thought, I'm just going to run this thing and not stop. Right? I'm not going to be like, I'm going to run the marathon. Sure. I'm not going to walk it. And about a third of the way, I realized, I think I might have much more fun if I do like run and then walk. But in my head, I was like, oh, then you're not doing it.
Imagine having fun while you're right? doing it.
So once I turn off that sort of all or nothing thinking and like, oh, I'm going to find some method that caters to that, it was so much more enjoyable. And I actually did enjoy it a lot more. And when I did the marathon, I actually didn't perform as well as I wanted to. I ended up walking the last 6 or 7 miles, but it didn't bother me. Like that day, even though I didn't meet the expectation of where I wanted to time or whatever, I still had so much fun doing it. And even the fact that I walked the last 6 miles didn't bother me at all because I was still doing it. So I looked at the challenge, but then I was very like intuitive eating, very gray about how I accomplished it in a way that worked for me.
That was great that during the event, you could actually turn it into something fun. Just decide, oh, why am I punishing myself? Why don't I just do what's fun?
Right.
And so I think that is for anybody who's dieted and has been caught in this sort of weight management cycle for a long time, then maybe that's what you do. What is fun?
Yeah.
What is fun? And like I always joke, like my favorite thing to do is dance in my living room. Mm-hmm.
After a couple glasses of wine, which you already
said. Well, that always helps. Yeah. Yeah. And that counts as movement. That totally. Makes me feel good. It's, again, what makes you feel good. So sometimes it's, like I joke, I get on the hamster wheel at the mm-hmm. YMCA. It's the elliptical machine because I have bad feet. And that's the only thing that kind of makes my feet feel okay. And also there's a TV and I can watch Seinfeld.
Yeah.
While I'm doing it. And it's like, oh, that's actually really fun, relaxing time for me. And I've realized I don't have to go a certain speed. I don't have to sweat if I don't want. I just have to do what feels good.
Right.
And that's been a revelation. So, and then there's the other aspect which ruins exercise or activity mm-hmm. for me, which is people saying, oh, it's so healthy for you. And I get mad at that because I don't want to hear about that. I don't health my exercise.
Yeah.
One time a friend and I were walking around the place that we worked at, and just because it's nice to walk in the afternoon
yeah.
and getting some fresh air, we both sit at desks, trapped in offices. And as we were walking, a guy that we used to see around who kind of constantly talked about his weight loss and how he lost so much weight by walking.
Yeah.
He drove by us in his truck. And as we were walking, he yelled out, "That's it. Keep going, ladies. You'll lose weight." And my friend just said, "Oh, fuck. He ruined it for us." And yeah. it was true. He ruined it. All of a sudden, we weren't just having a nice walk. We were having this walk where we were supposed to get thin at the end.
Right.
And that was not going to happen for either one of us. Yeah. We're not thin people.
Yeah.
So I really hate this idea of like, oh, do it. It's healthy for you. It's like, I don't want to do anything anymore that's healthy for me. That sucks. I want to do everything that's fun. I have one life. It's short. And I want to have fun.
Right. And I think the one thing I would recommend to people listening is be curious about what is that activity. Because it might not be something that you're sort of thinking about. But if you think about that idea of fun, you might try something that you never thought you would contemplate as quote unquote exercise. And I think that's a great way to sort of approach any new thing that you want. Is this going to be fun? Am I going to get some enjoyment out of this?
Yeah.
So what's your opinion on those on fitness trackers?
Oh, like a Fitbit.
Yeah.
So I hate them. I hate them because, well, first of all, I've never owned one. I have a pedometer,
mm-hmm.
and for a while I was wearing it, and I was getting a little obsessive about yeah. it. It was actually starting to make me feel a bit bad. So I decided I don't want to wear my pedometer to make myself feel bad. At first, it was like, look how many yeah. you know steps I took in a day. And then if I didn't take as many steps the next day, I was like, oh. I didn't do as good. And so I realized that's not the way forward for me because given my dieting history mm-hmm. and my desire to track things
yeah.
and look at progress and all that, it's too much of a trap for me to fall into.
Interesting.
To become kind of obsessed with that. And what I have noticed, I have a few friends, and I know you have a Fitbit,
yeah.
but I have a few friends that have them. And one person said one day, she said, oh, I forgot my Fitbit in the car. I should go and get it, but I'm going to walk out there and my steps won't be counted.
Right.
So I'm not going to walk out to my car to get my Fitbit because my steps won't be counted. To me, we both acknowledged it as a joke.
Yeah.
That kind of yeah. a joke, but it was also kind of true.
Yeah. So I don't wear my Fitbit anymore.
Oh.
But I did have one for a fair amount of time. And you know, I see the pluses and minuses. I completely get the obsessive part of it. And if I don't do this right on a certain day or meet this goal, I feel bad. And that was something that played on me a little bit. Here's the interesting thing that happened with me with my Fitbit is there is a community and a support group, not a support group, but like a group on Fitbit. If you get a Fitbit, you can join different communities, different groups, and there's a Health at Every Size community.
Oh, cool.
And there were, you know, a bunch of women in there and a few men. And at one point someone said, hey, I want to do some of these daily challenges or weekly challenges. Would anyone want to do it? Just put your name and I'll add you. And for about a month, these people, I had no idea who they were. I was in these weekly challenges with them. And what was really interesting was the comments we were all giving to each other during those weekly challenges, because someone would say, you know, I didn't meet the goal today, or I did really bad this week because of X, Y, and Z. And because it was a Health at Every Size community, everyone was so supportive, not in the way of saying, oh, you'll do better next week, right? But like empathy, real empathy,
mm-hmm.
like, oh, I know exactly what it's like when you're, you know, to have that. And I've experienced that too. And I know how difficult it is, you know, not saying, oh, come on, just get out there and do it, work through it, whatever else you might say, but it was actually quite supportive. And I like that. And it was, it sort of made the Fitbit a very interesting experience for me. The reason I really don't wear it is one is, the model I had kept breaking, and I don't need you to replace something that's breaking four or five times. Thank you very much, Fitbit. But two, you know, I can track those things a little bit better just without looking at a number, right? The number did become a little bit of a game for me, not in a good way. But I also see I do understand how people say it can help motivate them and to be more aware. I think your comments are really important to understand because it can become a slippery slope. It can become from, oh, I'm just going to check this, to being obsessive. And there were times where I was in a challenge with another friend, right, to who could walk the most steps in a day. And it's like 9 o'clock at night, and we were both walking around our living room, like texting each other.
You're faking it.
No, they were actual steps.
Real steps, right? Yeah,
but we were walking around the living room to try and beat each other for that day. And, you know, it's silly, right? I got dizzy because I'm walking in small circles. But I realized also, like, that's a little weird. Right?
It like, is weird. I mean, it's do totally I really need weird. To?
But that's also like the competitive side of me, Matrix. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I am happy not wearing it. I don't really miss it. I understand it can be that people can have a healthy relationship with it. I think it's very easy to develop an unhealthy relationship with it.
So I think a question to ask yourself if you are wearing one of those fitness trackers is, you know, do you feel guilty ever? And if you start to feel guilty, why? You know, what is it that you're trying to accomplish? Is it to, you know, feel better? And is feeling guilty going to be a part of feeling better? Probably not.
Right.
So, and again, to me, doing nothing to track my fitness has forced me to get really in tune with my body. So I know if I haven't had some sort of movement, you know, that I enjoy and that I find useful, if I haven't had that for a few days, for whatever reason, I've gotten busy, things have come up, I actually feel really physically poorly. Like my back starts to hurt. I start to feel really anxious about life. And that's a reminder to me, like, you got to go and do something because you're going to feel a lot better.
Yeah.
And my partner, he has actually become pretty in tune with me too. I'll say, oh, should I? I don't know. I don't know if I want to go exercise. And he'll say, I think you should actually go exercise.
Right.
You can tell when I'm getting anxious or stressed out. He goes, you'll feel better if you exercise.
Right.
If I feel better, he's going to be happy.
Right.
So yeah,
the other thing I'll add to the Fitbit thing, right, is to give yourself an idea is if this is a healthy relationship or not, is take it off for a couple days. And see if you still walk as much, but enjoying it, right? Just like the comment someone else said, oh, I'm really sad. I'm not going to be able to track these steps today. So I'm just not going to walk, right? If you, mm-hmm. I would say if you have a really healthy relationship with your Fitbit or whatever you're using, you can take it off and still walk as much and be just as happy with those steps, even though they're not being tracked. The other thing is with those personal fitness trackers is that they do have so many built-in features to track your calories. And so the nice thing about the Fitbit is I was able to disable all those. So on my dashboard, nothing about calories ever came up. I didn't have to use any of those things. But unless you know how to sort of fiddle with those settings, that is another red flag for me.
And if you're an at-risk dieter, you might not even want to be exposed
exactly
to having to deal with calories or disabling it. I mean, maybe it's a temptation.
Yeah.
Well, if I just track my calories for a
today.
Day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like the gateway drug.
Exactly.
For dieting.
So, you know, but they're becoming more and more popular. I mean, I see a lot of people with Apple Watches, and that is the biggest, to me, it's one of the main selling points of the Apple Watch. Is the, you know, it reminds you to stand up every you know, 30 minutes or whatever, if you're, if you haven't moved in a little while. So, you know, I think they're just going to become more and more pervasive, and people are going to continue to use them. And I think it sort of fits in with our clean eating discussion that we had on our last episode, is the exercise that people do isn't, it doesn't seem anymore that it's just about the exercise. It's, there's a almost like dogma, religious fervor to it.
Right.
I did this. I'm so good for doing it. It's so intense, but man, I'm so awesome because I did it. Right. And it's like holding it almost over people's, over everyone else.
It's the new piety.
Right.
Yeah. It's sort of clean eating and your Fitbit and you are holy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So is personal, our personal fitness trackers, the new diet, you know, because again, yeah, we've all heard, everybody's heard, oh, diets don't work. Well, my personal fitness tracker is the new way for me to get obsessive about my weight or my health or, you know,
right,
whatever. So, I mean, that's why I mean, there's many reasons I don't wear one. So I've talked about them, but,
yeah,
again, I don't know if you saw the article that Moderation Movement from Australia posted, and it was about sort of, I think the gist of it was like, is your fitness tracker making you crazy,
yeah,
and obsessive? And just looking at the responses, uh-huh, there were some really rabid responses from people saying like, how dare you, you know, insult the fitness tracker, essentially.
Yeah.
And there were more responses like that I saw at first than there were people like me saying, yeah, I don't want to wear one.
Yeah.
You know, and so you realize like how dedicated people are to these things.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, okay, so this is one person saying, you know, maybe this is a problem, and people attacked.
Yeah.
And I was pretty stunned at how, like, I guess that's when I realized like people are really into these things.
Yeah. So. And so I think that's an important thing for everyone to think about is, what is your, is that a healthy obsession? Is it an unhealthy obsession? Is it, can you take it off for a couple of days and be happy,
yeah,
with moving your body still?
Are there healthy obsessions? Like, is my obsession with Plants versus Zombies 2 a healthy obsession? No, I can tell you it's not. It's not at
there
all.
There you go.
So I don't know. Are there healthy obsessions?
But I think we just don't, we don't think of it in those ways when it comes to exercise, because again, we're so focused on, I think, just going back to what the Atlantic article talked about.
Yeah.
It comes from this space of, I'm doing this not as a general self-care.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing this to change my body.
Well, and that's enforced by the world.
Right.
Because, I mean, this is what happened to me when I went to the doctor recently. And for a totally non-weight related thing. And I don't get on the scale when I go to the doctor, because just because of what the scale used to do to my head. I know what,
yeah,
I weigh, but, you know, I don't want to have that mind fuck when I go to the,
yeah,
doctor with the scale. And so she said, oh, what's your weight? And I said, oh, I told her what it was. And I said, I don't get on the scale because I don't live like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were talking about this problem that I had. And I said, I really think it's stress related and that's probably going to resolve soon because I've had some changes in my life. One of them is my job. And the other is I don't have a crazy commute anymore. And I can walk to work because it's really close.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, that's great. And this is after I told her my weight. And she said, so maybe now we'll see that weight come down a little bit. And I was like,
so did your middle finger come up?
Damn
a little
you.
Bit?
Yeah. I wrote about this recently in my blog, and
yeah,
I was kind of stunned, even though I have, you know, I'm pretty much okay with who I am now,
yeah,
and I've come to terms with eating and exercising all of the time. I was just stunned and I felt shamed.
Did you end up saying anything to her?
Yeah, I totally did.
Yeah.
I said, you know, I don't think my weight's going to change, and it doesn't matter because I don't use that as an intervention outcome anymore. And she goes, oh, okay, but usually, she kept kind of insisting, like, usually when people start exercising more, than I said, well, first of all, I already exercise. Like, this isn't,
yeah,
a new thing for me.
Right.
It's not like I've been sitting on my couch for the last 10 years doing,
yeah,
nothing. I'm an exerciser. I'm a mover. I like to move. And so I was just sort of insulted. And I just kind of kept pushing back. And I said, listen, I know you think that, but this is not what I'm hoping for. What I really want is stress relief and feeling good in the morning and at the end of the day that I can just walk and enjoy the outside.
Yeah.
And, she finally... got it to back off. And I finally said, have you heard of Health at Every Size? And I had to explain that to her. And she said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend you about your weight. And I was like, I'm not offended about my weight. I just don't want you to ruin my exercise with health.
Right. So what I want to point out for everyone listening is that we need to advocate for ourselves, especially in a doctor's office.
Yeah.
And that is one area where so many of my clients struggle with, is getting that voice to say, this is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. When you say this, this is what it can relate to, these feelings and triggers and for me. And I got this under control. Like, give me the space to work on this in my own way. That doesn't have to be about the scale and BMI and all these things. And I think it's such, you gave us such a great lesson right there about how to advocate for ourselves in the medical setting.
Yeah. And not to say that will be easy. I happen to have a pretty understanding doctor.
Yeah.
And she's pretty mellow. I think, unfortunately, a lot of people can still try to advocate for themselves. And doctors are, you know, they can withhold treatment from you if they feel like they want to.
Right.
Because you're not being a good patient.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm hoping they aren't doing that. But I think, you know, I've talked to enough people that have had this experience where, you know, the doctor sees themselves as the health authority and you're being the bad patient. If you're not doing, and if you give them pushback, then they are not going to give you what you need, which is maybe life changing or life saving treatment. So not to say it will be easy and not to say you will even have a good outcome, but it's like you said, we do have to stand up for ourselves.
Right.
We have to advocate for ourselves.
And it's almost like a muscle. We need to learn to exercise it.
If you're feeling brave enough.
Yeah.
If you know, so. But, you know, after she said that to me, I actually didn't walk to work for a month.
Really?
Yeah. I think it was a sort of unconscious decision. Yeah. And I mean, I was sick for a little while and the weather was kind of bad. And I just decided I don't want to walk right now.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's okay too. So I drove my 5 minutes to work.
Yeah.
And I felt okay about that. I was like, no, I'm going to only do it when it feels good psychologically and physically.
Yeah. So. I was, I think it's come up in this podcast already, but I love Blue Zones. And I was talking about Blue Zones with some other people today, and we really focus on this move naturally part of Blue Zones, and that let's be in communities where we are nudged, not forced, to move naturally. And for me, when I think about that, it's about, you know, if I'm going to the market, I'm going to hop on my bike, right? I'm going to hop on my bike and go get a couple things from the market instead of hopping in my car and driving a mile, right? I can bike a mile. That's easy. Mm-hmm. I can even walk the mile. But it's ditching the car and being out and about in the community whenever it works. And those are, listen, we live in LA, right? I mean, it rains twice a year, basically, and we need more, but you know, that's what it's at right now. And we can be outside doing stuff in our community all the time. Doesn't have to be going to Equinox, paying $150 a month.
Right.
Sorry, Equinox, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, or you know, going to the gym for just that. It can be all these different creative ways to get exercise.
Yeah.
I wanted, one of the things that, you know, I wanted to sort of bring up near is this other article I saw about exercise, and it's this woman who's writing it who's a she calls herself a curvy lady, who's a runner, and she talks about her own experience about, you know, that assuming someone is exercising just because they need to lose weight is a horrible assumption, right? So it's like saying to someone, oh, keep at it, keep going, you're gonna, you know,
yeah, get going, fatty,
right?
You'll be thin someday,
you know, or good for you getting out here. I mean, maybe we just can move our bodies for self-care. And she talks a lot about how to start exercising in a way where it's all about self-care. And I think if there's one thing I hope people listening will take from this episode, it's that, is that moving our body is probably the best gift we can give ourselves. That doesn't have to cost a lot. right? It's yeah. It can be easy, it can be fun, but it's one of those things that might be difficult to start, right? As you know, I've sort of shared, right? It can be difficult and it ebbs and flows, but it starts with just being, like they sort of said in this article, is being kind to your body, right? Being kind to the body that you have today, accepting the body you have today, and enjoying all the amazing things that it can do, and rewarding it with just a little bit of movement. And it rewards us back with all the benefits that we talked about already.
Yeah. And I don't want to be completely ableist because, yeah. you know, there are people who are not able to move at all and exercise yeah. at all. So I think those people shouldn't be shamed and feel bad about not being able to exercise. And I think that we kind of live in a world that's so focused on movement
yeah.
that we forget there are people who cannot move for you know, or have varying levels of ability for movement. So I think for those people, whatever level of movement they can find
yeah.
is great. And but the other thing is to remember, there's a lot of different ways to exercise yourself. You can exercise your mind.
Yeah.
And this is what my partner is always saying. So, you know, so what if you're like the healthiest person running around out there? Are you interesting to talk to? Have you read something that you learned about that was interesting that gave you a greater understanding of the world? So I think, I guess to say that exercise is still a small part of our health.
Yeah.
And that if you're not able to, there are still other ways to feel good.
Yeah.
So, but I do love the idea of self-care.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just standing up and stretching at my desk. So absolutely. Maybe it's putting your hands in the air and shaking them out if that's, yeah. you know.
And a dance party at home is perfectly acceptable.
I totally recommend it.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
With some wine.
So maybe one of those, we'll take the hidden camera out of your house that we've had in there for the past couple months.
Hidden? And I totally want to video myself and be like, look at me. I'm going to do it someday. I'm a ridiculous dancer.
I think it'll be awesome.
It'll be ridiculously awesome.
Well,
yeah,
but it'll go ridiculously viral. So
seems doubtful.
Yeah, right.
Make it stop.
Anything else you would add about today's topic?
You know, just it's what you said. Be curious.
Yeah.
You know, and find out. To me, it's intuitive eating and intuitive exercising.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
Tune into your body. And maybe right now, exercise does not feel good at all for you. So don't do it. You know,
yeah.
if it's making you more miserable, don't do it for a while.
Yeah.
Or at all. I mean, if you never want to exercise, that's totally your prerogative to never exercise.
Yeah.
So I say do what makes you feel good.
Right.
Yeah.
And
it's a short life.
Absolutely. And I think it's anything that I think the word I want to take away from this is fun. Find something that's fun and that it might be challenging and it might be difficult at first, but there should be joy in it.
Yeah.
And you should finish and feel like you got some pleasure out of it. You got some joy. It was fun. You seize the day, right?
Yeah.
It was, you experienced something, no matter how much sweat came out or not, you just experienced something. And that's the joy of it.
Yeah. I did a hula hooping class.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't sweat at all. And I was really bad at it. But it was so much fun.
Yeah.
And I felt like a child. And I thought, oh, this is, you know, I think a lot of people say, oh, well, I've heard a lot of people say, in fact,
yeah,
one person I work with said, oh, you know, you can't just bike along and not break a sweat and it's no good. And I was thinking, really, that's what you're thinking? That's exactly right. The opposite of everything they found in science, in scientific studies. And, you know, just again, this idea of like, if you didn't sweat, don't bother.
Right.
And that's ridiculous.
You know. Speaking of fun, I heard one of the most exciting workouts here, and I don't think he does them anymore, but Richard Simmons used to, you know, host, go into his studio.
Right.
Like Saturdays.
I totally wanted to do that, and then I heard he was being held hostage in his
right.
house.
So,
but I guess he's not.
So, Richard, if you want to have a session, we'll come in and hang out with you.
Yeah. I have always had mixed feelings about Richard Simmons because
sure.
he's been so much an advocate for
absolutely.
Weight loss. At the same time, he, you know, did say like, where do the fat people go on exercise? And I think that's why he kind of opened Slimmons.
Right.
I mean, even the name is kind of gross, but it's Richard Simmons. I grew up with him.
Right.
And I totally wanted to go to Slimmons.
Yeah.
And now we should, I don't think he's doing it because he's at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, free Richard Simmons and let him go back.
He told us he was fine.
Yeah. So maybe we'll all be there one day and have a Dietitian's Unplugged.
We'll introduce him to health at every size.
Totally. It'd be great. Oh, I'm sure he'd love us.
Well, that's it for us. Thanks for joining us. We will be back soon with another exciting episode of Dietitians Unplugged.
Leave comments, give us some ratings on iTunes, and if there's ever topics you want, check us out on Facebook and let us know topics that you'd like us to discuss in future episodes. We'd love to hear from you.
Bye.
Yeah, there you go.